You're not going to believe some of this stuff. But as we get into lecture 11 here, comparisons, practices, which is practices and practitioners, it sort of strikes me that it's hard to believe when you think about it, some of the things we're talking about. In fact, it's all a bit incredible. But in particular here in this lecture, practices and practitioners, again, we're dealing with comparisons, and we're going to talk about the pillars of Islam. Everybody, if they know anything about Islam, knows the five pillars of Islam that the Sunnis have: the confession of faith, the ritual prayer, almsgiving, fasting, and pilgrimage. But the thing that's interesting is that these five pillars mean something else to in popular Islam. In other words, they have another purpose. First of all, the confession of faith drives away, the confession of faith: there is no other God but Allah, and Muhammad is the apostle of God. Really, it's a declaration in Orthodox Islam of the oneness of God, monotheism, strict monotheism, and the apostleship of Muhammad. But it's there. I just wanted to refer you to a little an account of some of our students working in Africa, and this is what they said. They said, stepping out my front gate, I met some neighbor kids on their way home from a religious school right behind our house. Listen to the sound clip for an experience of what we hear throughout the day. Following close behind their greeting was a request for me to do something I will never do. Say the Shahada. That's the Muslim profession of faith. No, I can't. I follow Jesus Christ, I said. No, say it. This is what you say. And so this is what they were trying to pressure this young couple, this young fellow, to do, who's one of our students. And they have, I remember them trying to get me to say the Shahada too, as if that would make me a Muslim. But I just wanted to alert you to the fact that the Shahada, confession of faith, is more than just a statement of there is no other God but God and Muhammad is the apostle. But confession of faith drives away evil spirits. Prayer? Well, confession of faith and then ritual prayer five times a day is interesting as well. That ablution is almost more important in some contexts than the prayer itself. The ablution is not bodily purity, but get you free from the demons. It's not worship. It's not bodily purity, but it's free from the influence of evil spirits. And you begin with your ablutions on the right side. If there's no water available, then sand can be a substitute. Your head is covered, and this could be a tradition that you get from the Talmud. So that the spirits won't enter your mind, and a sutra or a stone or a stick, and you can Google this and find pictures of where Muslims will put if they're out in the desert, they'll put a stick in front to protect from demons. And it might say that this is to stop any influence, other distractions and so on. There's also this in the mosque, but really, my understanding is, in some understanding, quite a bit of understanding, is that it is to keep, to protect you, the Muslim, from the demons. And I meant to bring Al-Muslim along in volume 4 and page 190 through 94. I didn't think of it, forgot to bring it. One more book to bring. But another thing is that Muslims will stand right together. There's no gap among the worshippers, lest Satan squeeze in. The muezzin, that's the guy who gives the call to prayer, That call drives away Satan and demons. Even the takbir, Allahu Akbar, God is great, is a cry against the demons. When reading the Quran, you take refuge against Satan, Shaitan. And sneezing during prayer is ominous because it gives Satan a chance to get in. You see, it puts a whole new slant on the five pillars, doesn't it? Totally. What about almsgiving? You know, good thing to give alms. There's no question about it. Except, I am convinced from what I've read and also from what I've experienced that people give alms oftentimes so that someone will not put a curse on them. You know, if you're in the bazaar in Pakistan and an older woman, I'm not going to call her an old woman, but sometimes older women are desperate conditions and they look evil, I suppose, for various reasons, and they come up and they beg. They grab a hold of you and they don't let go. And oftentimes you'll see people will give to them because these older women have the gift, it is thought, to put a curse on you. Use the evil eye, put a curse on you. So you give to them to prevent that. You see, that gives almsgiving a totally different light. And what about fasting? Well, fasting to protect against diseases and the pilgrimage, as we've already talked about, a good deal, in order to get the blessing from touching or kissing the black stone, and on and on and on. So the purpose or the meaning of each pillar in Islam changes. Now, the devil supposedly spends the night in your nose. And I was going to bring Al-Muslim along and read out of that. So what do you do in the morning? You snuff out your nose three times. And I think back of some of my own experiences, listening to people early in the morning and by the pump, you know, the hand pump, they can make more noise, coughing and spitting. And so I'm not surprised. I mean, this does make sense that they're making so much noise to get rid of Satan. Snuff it out. Now, let me also here, I think, is I've referred to the hadith several times, but here is the website that I mentioned to you before. It's http :// www.searchtruth.com. That's http:// www.searchtruth.com. You can go in there and you can do a search on the devil in your nose or something like that, and hopefully you will be able to pull up these stuff, because presumably you don't have the hadith at your fingertips, but it is online. Now, there's a question here. Are there Islamic aspects where form and meaning are inseparable? Of course, this question comes out because of contextualization, you know, that if we can just change the meaning, we can use some of the Islamic forms. I think that's true. There's nothing wrong with bowing and prostrating. When we prayed in Pakistan every morning with a bunch of people, some of whom were Muslim converts, we would get on our knees and we would, we would bow, sometimes holding our head to the floor. That's great. I think it's a good sign. It's a very humble and a position of thoughtfulness and humility and of need. But I think that the ablutions if you were to import and implement ablutions, I think it's going too far, because the ablutions are so filled with wrong meaning. And I've just talked a little bit about them, that I don't think that you can, always pour new meaning into some of these practices. Now, here's a chart that is an interesting chart, I think, because it shows, it's out of Bill Musk and used with permission, that it shows the practitioners of popular Islam who are below the line. You might have this book, so it won't be anything new to you, but if you don't have it, you will have to listen very carefully. There's a lot on the chart. And then above the line are the practitioners of ideal Islam. So these are the practitioners of ideal and popular Islam. There is another thing here, less power to more power, meaning that the further you get to the right, the more power is needed. So up here, it's also another thing that says, from center, meaning things that are more, accepted, to things that are less accepted to the periphery. For instance, sorcery is more of more on the margins than some of the other stuff that they do, Muslims do. Well, let's just talk about some of the things that both practitioners of ideal Islam and practitioners of folk Islam might be doing. For instance, charms or talismans. Down here they're called dua writers or prayer writers. So the dua writer in folk Islam does basically some of the same things that a lot of Muslims, clerics, even in the city, will do this. But that's not all they do. As you get more into the villages, these village clerics, these imams, do more of these practices than anyone. Really. So you can get down charms, talismans, curing by herbs, curing by divination, fortune-telling, exorcism, magic, and sorcery. So you see you're going down the line here. Notice that you've got the dua writer, the prayer writer, the midwife, the magician, the shaman, the sorcerer. We notice that the women in folk Islam are quite active. It's interesting that in formal Islam they have been pressed down and in other words, not really given a place of leadership. They can go to the mosque, but they really don't have a part in it. And most of the time they don't go to the mosque, unless you're in Southern California. But in many places in the world, the Muslim women do not go to the mosque. But in folk Islam, they have had they've had some influence. And the midwife uses various and sundry powers. We noticed the other day, that just in the use of an egg, for instance, they do use this stuff, divination. I think you're getting into now a village cleric, an imam would be more into that kind of stuff in the villages than imam in the city. Fortune telling, yes, exorcism, more the village cleric will be into that kind of thing, magic and sorcery. So you see, there you have it. There is quite a bit of overlap here, isn't there? And this is an interesting chart that isn't foolproof, but it's something that that Muslims are into, and it really doesn't show. There's a whole lot of distinction sometimes.